Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hey, back again. I gotta fix this mic. What happened to this mic? Whoa, it's way too low. Here we go. My gosh, what happened here? Who was in the studio before me? Boy, the things we have to do. Yeah, we have to put up with before we can do a good show. Reginald in the production studio, ready to go? Good. Thumbs up. Looks like the dials are bopping extra bouncy today. Good to see. Good to hear. I think we're gonna have a good one today. And that is not like we don't always have good ones, but I'm in a good mood for this. I'm ready to go. Let's go, 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 go. Put your sandwich down. Let's go. All right. Levels are good. Mic is hot. Host is hotter. So let's do this one. Put it in the books. This is 198. We're getting close to 200. I still don't know what we're going to do for the 200 episode, right? We have to talk about that. Well, we should do something special, but then I also always think about Walter Payton and how he always said when he went into the end zone, when he scored a touchdown, he didn't do any elaborate dances or spike the ball. He just gave the ball to the ref. He said, you know, when you score a touchdown, you should act like you've been there before. It shouldn't be this big celebration because you expected to get there and you've been there before. So I don't know if I'm going to go Walter Payton view on the 200th episode or, you know, go New Year's Eve on it. We'll have to decide. But right now, who cares? We're doing 198. Here we go. Three S's. Star. Smile. Strong. You ready, Reggie? Me too. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure online at WGNplus.com. Or this podcast is available anywhere where you download your favorite podcasts. Whatever platform you use. Don't forget to subscribe so you are always in tune to that platform. You can rate this podcast. And most importantly, tell your friends. Send them a message. Send them a link. Send them the news that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic and that you think they should be listening too. If you are a new listener or a longtime listener or anywhere in between, don't forget, you go to WGNplus.com, you go to the entertainment section, there is a prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and there you will find all previous 197 episodes. I'm no mathematician, but that can only mean one thing. This is 198. So, before I officially started to record, I was talking to my producer, Reggie, and was saying how we are coming close up to episode 200, and some podcast listeners of this podcast have said, wow, you're getting up to 200, Jim. Any big plans for 200? What can we expect? Something big in store for 200? I don't know yet. part of me feels that that's a big deal, right? 200 podcasts, I guess, as we approach the big 200 number, as well as in about a month and a half or so, in May, mid to late May, I believe it was, we will be marking our fourth year of doing the podcast. So a few different special anniversaries coming up, but 200 is a big number. So I have to decide whether I'm going to do something extra special or not. And there are certainly reasons to do something big, right? Big number, 200. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. We can make a New Year's Eve party out of it like that, something big and special or different. Or we can take the Walter Payton kind of view, which a lot of times I do prefer, which is when Walter Payton, the great Chicago Bears running back, especially in the 70s when all the it started the whole elaborate touchdown production that goes on now. When a player scores a touchdown, there's dancing, there's, you know, selfies, there's choreography. Not just one guy, 17 guys are all doing a dance, like a flash mob, or, you know, they guys jump into the stands, or they do, you know, they do flips, or whatever it is. There's a big, elaborate, presentation now when someone scores a touchdown in the NFL. In the old days, the biggest thing was that you would spike the ball to show your excitement about scoring a touchdown. And amidst all of that, and a lot of that first started in the 70s, the dancing at first, and now it's gone into this, you know, as I said, sometimes it looks like a Broadway musical is going on in the end zone. But when that all was beginning, this more flamboyance, this kind of the early days of look at me, in the midst of all that, Walter Payton, perhaps at the during his playing days, certainly one of the best, if not the best running back, simply would give the ball, just hand the ball to the ref. Every so often, Walter would spike it. I think emotion would overcome him at times, and he certainly went with that as well. But for the most part, Walter would just flip the ball to the ref, and people asked him, "Why do you do that? Why don't you do some elaborate end zone celebration after a touchdown?" And he said, "My view is that you should act like you've been there before, and you belong there, and it's not that big of a deal. You expected to get there, and you got there. That's the goal in our game, is to score a touchdown. And if you're good enough, you should be in that end zone all the time. So it shouldn't be like it's some celebration that, my gosh, I can't believe I ever got here, like it was some once-in-a-lifetime event. You should act like it's just another day at the office. Here's the ball. I'll be back again. Next possession." And I like that. I like that view of things. Of just this is the job. I'm supposed to get a touchdown. So in my view, I'm supposed to be at 200, and I'm supposed to be doing a podcast at number 500. What's the big deal? 200's a big number. I understand that's got a couple of zeros. You know, we always get excited to celebrate any kind of countdown that has a five or a zero at the end. And if you have two zeros at the end, my goodness, that's a big deal. But I don't really think I did anything big for the 100th episode, so I'm still debating. And then what's a big deal? And then if you do some big deal on 200, what do you do for 250 or 300? Can you top that? So that's what you have to keep in mind when you overindulge on a certain milestone. I don't know if that's even a milestone, 200, but it's an impressive number. I'll take that. So we'll see. Still in the planning stages. But or maybe not. Still not even in the planning stages, in the decision-making stage. Might have to have a brainstorm meeting. In a previous life, I worked in public relations, and I was the head of a public relations group in a PR firm. I was the head of the group, and so we would have brainstorm meetings about specific projects that we would have to do for a client to help promote, you know, whatever their project was, you know, to the media and to the public. And so, you know, and its height, we had like, you know, 20 people in the group. It was a nice group, and I really enjoyed working with them. And in fact, that's where I met Emily, regular contributor to this podcast. Emily Arminetti used to work for me, but work, you know, I mean, she did, but she didn't. I never, you know, was that kind of a boss. We worked together, let me put it that way. But anyway, and that's where I met Emily, and that's where we bonded so well, because we both were fans of entertainment and pop culture. And so even though it's been 20 years since I've worked with Emily, I always kept her in mind, and we always kept in touch. And that's why when I needed someone to be my sort of pop culture foil, she was one of the first people I thought of. But yeah, that's where I met Emily. And so, but anyway, we would have these brainstorm meetings where, you know, you go in with your group and you just sit there by a whiteboard and you say, okay, here's our project. Our client A wants this to be done. They're announcing this, and what creative ideas do we have? And basically in a brainstorm session, what you do is you just throw, you know, any idea out there and you write it down. Good, bad, or indifferent, you throw it on the board. It might spark something else. That's the idea of the brainstorm meeting, is just to get your team together and let the creativity flow in a unjudgmental, unbiased way, and you know, throw ideas out there as a group. Let everyone just say what they think might be a good idea. As I said before, no judgment. Just throw them up there, write them down, and then you know, you would go one by one and see if there's, you know, is this something worth you know, digging deeper into? Is this idea sparking any other ideas that piggyback onto that? And let's get the creative juices going. And so the rule in a brainstorm meeting is, kind of the axiom is, there are no bad ideas in a brainstorm meeting. Once again, the whole idea is for people to feel unencumbered or not to be intimidated, but just to throw out whatever they think might be a good idea. Because you never know. That idea on its own might not be all that great, but someone sees it, never thought of it, and then they've got a good idea coming off of that one, and that one becomes the really good idea. So the whole idea is to nurture creativity and just have everybody, just whatever they feel off the top of their heads or what they might be thinking, just throw it out there. Nobody's going to laugh. No one's going to, you know, shrug. No one's going to boo. And it's just this open, free exchanging of ideas, right? So that's the idea of the brainstorm. And so if you've listened to me with any kind of regularity through the podcasts over the years now or on the radio, you know that my sense of humor is always a little edgy and a little biting, and it's all in fun. Whatever I always try to say to people, if they do are offended, and especially in today's world, it's easier to offend people whenever, because people are much more sensitive, and I believe they have people don't have as good of a sense of humor. I really think that people are so guarded today that they're more susceptible to look for something, the bad side of a joke, than just enjoy the joke. Everybody has their radars up. And professional, I've noticed this for many years, and professional comedians are now beginning to say it, because they're noticing it. That's their livelihood, and they're noticing it when they're out with audiences. And people like Jerry Seinfeld and even like Mel Brooks, I mean, some of the best, funniest people we've ever had, have said how, you know, today's world of political correctness and sensitivity is ruining comedy. The whole idea of a joke is to poke fun at something or someone. It's not meant as a mean thing. It's meant as, you know, a nice little distraction. And we're all the subjects of a joke one time or another. So I always say, you know, if I feel someone has been offended or taken a comment that I've said the wrong way, it's always meant in fun or for the sake of just, you know, lightening the mood. Whether it's on the radio or even, you know, in my personal life, it's like, geez, you know, that I'm not, you know, this is just a joke. And I always say, especially on the radio, whatever takes place in the studio is pure entertainment value. It's not fake. But my point is, I'm going for the entertain. We're there to entertain. Even on this podcast, we're there to entertain. If I say something to a guest or even to Emily when I've had her on and things like that, that sounds, wow, you're being mean. I'm not being mean. It's for effect. We're here to entertain you, right? And so, of course, one of my favorite lines, and I didn't do it all, when you have a good line, you have a good joke, you can't overdo it either. You have to pick your moments. But every so often, we'd be in the... I still think it's a great line. I don't even, to be honest with you, in today's world, I don't know, in the corporate world, and it's been a while since I've been in that kind of environment, I don't even know if I could do this or say this for the fear of somebody, you know, we're such a sensitive society now, we're so easily offended, and everybody's always looking around the corner for the incorrectness of any comment you make, even if it's a compliment, even if it's a joke. It's got to go through some kind of a filter, like 7 filters before someone understands it. So I don't even know if I could use this anymore, but I will tell you that I always felt it was one of my greatest hits. And every so often I will resurrect it and try to make it appropriate to the situation I'm in. But just as a, you know, background here, it the first time that it ever came up was in the situation of a brainstorm meeting. So as I said, the whole idea is just let people feel free and very, you know, not intimidated, just open to just throwing whatever ideas they have. We're going to write them down. As I said, the axiom is there's no bad ideas in a brainstorm meeting. And so we'd be sitting there in the group, and I'm kind of leading the meeting. And, Tom and Sally and, anybody have ideas? Ideas, ideas? You know, I'm trying to get people involved and, you know, how about you? Got anything? What are you thinking? And so they would, you know, we're listing all these ideas up on the whiteboard, and there's this really great, energy of creativity beginning to bubble here, which is great. That's always fun when you're in that kind of a room and ideas are being passed around and people are bouncing ideas off one another. It's great. I enjoy the collaborative, creative, environment. I really do. I always have. I always look to work. I always enjoy working with other people on things. It's fun. It's great to share and build upon other things. With other people. Once again, I've got an audience here, right? You know, I've got these, you know, 20 some people in the room. So there's an audience. As far as I'm concerned, as more as there's 2 or 3 people, that's an audience for me. So of course, I'm not going to hold back on my sense of humor and anything. And once again, in my view, you know, it's a joke. But one of my favorite lines was in the brainstorm session was, Tom, you have an idea? And I think we might do blah 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 blah. And we'd write it down, and I would look at it, and I would say, you know, thanks, Tom. You know, as we all know, in a brainstorm meeting, there are no bad ideas. But I have to say, that is a bad idea. And many times it wasn't. And that would, and that's the whole, that was the irony of the joke. I would actually wait until there was a really good idea or one that was a little far off that we all, that, that everybody, even the person saying it was kind of like, I'm not really sure if this works, but what about this? They even were you know, a little leery about it. But as I said, you know, you say, hey, anything you think, just put out there. So even the person sometimes was qualifying it to say, I don't know if this is a great idea or not, but I was just thinking maybe do this. And then I would say, you know, hey, Tom, don't worry about it. Because in a brainstorm meeting, there are no bad ideas. And then you wait 2, 3, 4. However, in this case, that is a bad idea. And that it used to get a good laugh. I don't even know if it would get a good laugh anymore. I don't know if I would be sent down to HR or fired. We are so sensitive today. And a lot of people just don't get the joke. This is not what I was meant to talk about, but that's what you love about an Elton Jim podcast, right? I'll get to what I was going to talk about today. Trust me. But I want to just mention this. So along these lines, it just popped in my head. I don't know if you heard the story, but recently, country singer Garth Brooks was doing a concert in Detroit, Michigan. And he had on, you know, Garth is such a crowd pleaser, right, in every town. And so he was wearing a football jersey of one of the great Detroit Lions players of all time, the leading rusher in NFL history. I believe this player still has the title. I know he broke I think he quit just before breaking Walter Payton's record. He didn't want to break Walter Payton's record, which was amazing because this player, Barry Sanders, on the Detroit Lions was certainly going to break the record. And I think he may have actually stopped short because he didn't feel, talk about a non-selfish player. He didn't feel that he was worthy to break Walter Payton's record. I'm not making this a Walter Payton podcast on purpose. It's just kind of popping up. But yeah, so wow, you know. But anyway, one of the great running backs of all time, and certainly one of the best players in Detroit Lions football history, is Barry Sanders. And Barry Sanders' number was number 20. And so, you know, Garth Brooks is in Detroit at a concert, and so he's wearing Barry Sanders' jersey. And so it's on the back of the jersey, Barry Sanders' number was 20. And so, you know, he's got the Lions jersey. It says Sanders on the back, and it says a 20, right? And so, of course, at the concert, you know, the people get the reference, right? Because they're Detroit Lions fans. Well, this is my point about people being oversensitive, people not getting the joke, people looking for reasons to create a political correctness drama or controversies. Apparently someone online sees a picture of Garth Brooks with a Barry Sanders jersey, number 20, and then writes online or goes on Twitter or gets somehow, you know, goes on Garth Brooks's website or somewhere and, you know, lays into Garth Brooks for saying that he's a Trump supporter, or he's an anti-Trump guy because he's obviously supporting Bernie Sanders in 2020. This person clearly had no idea who Barry Sanders was, had no idea that he wore number 20, and had no idea that he was one of the best players in Detroit Lions history and that Garth Brooks was performing in Detroit. He saw this as Garth Brooks wearing a Bernie Sanders 2020 election year jersey and walking around promoting Barry Sanders. So completely wrong on every count, but here's one person who is completely ignorant of what this is, and looks at it as a completely wrong, takes it in the wrong way. And then, of course, now online, we... So he writes and you know, these disparaging words about Garth Brooks and how he's an anti-Trump guy, and how dare you wear that Bernie Sanders jersey. I mean, just completely wrong, but actually starts a kerfuffle up, because then there's other people out there who have no idea who Barry Sanders is. He retired like 15, 20 years ago. Younger people might not know who he is. They just see, you know, what they see. They don't have any context. They don't have any knowledge, and they just shoot from the hip, because that's what we do now, and make a ridiculous comment that gains some momentum with other people who are equally uninformed. And now Garth Brooks is out there having to defend himself for doing something completely non-offensive. And now he has to be out there defending himself against a charge that is completely unfounded, completely wrong, completely ignorant, completely uninformed. But because everybody has a voice today, even the ignorant, even the uninformed, even the oversensitive... So, I don't know whether we're on a good road or not, I'll be honest with you. But that one really jumped out at me about just totally, you know, talk about out of context. You can't even, I mean, here's a guy who's being a performer, who's playing to the crowd in Detroit by wearing a Hall of Famers jersey, and someone who doesn't get it read something completely wrong and completely negative, and Garth Brooks has to go out there and defend himself. So I don't know if my, every idea is a good idea in a brainstorm, but I have to say, in this case, that's a bad idea. I don't know if that would float anymore. I don't know if I could tell that joke. So who knows? But that's where we're at. But I always liked that funny little joke. I don't know how I got on that subject, but it doesn't matter. Because that's what you love about Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. It will go in any direction it seems to go. So, what I did want to talk about today, completely by accident, I was watching a TV commercial the other day, and it was for some cereal. I think it actually was something, I don't even know if it was a commercial. It was something about Raisin Bran. And I was telling my wife how, you know, I remember when my dad back in the 70s suddenly, you know, Raisin Bran initially... The Kellogg's Raisin Bran and the Post Raisin Bran, the original Raisin Bran cereal, was an attempt to get onto the emerging health kick of the 70s, because that's when things were beginning to get, people were getting a little more health conscious about what you were eating. You know, there were people. My dad had a heart attack when he was 47 years old. I mean, a major heart attack. He almost died. I mean, it was very serious. But, you know, he was a smoker for many years, and it was a whole different lifestyle. People don't, you know, younger people, they don't even understand. There was a time, folks, when there was not a health club everywhere. There were not Peloton bikes in everyone's home. The those who worked out was a very, very small number, and it was mostly men who were working out with weights. It was weightlifters. There wasn't a health, a big you know, premium on fitness at all. That's why a lot of people died at a younger age, not that long ago. Really, it's not even a joke, but you really have to credit Jane Fonda, of all people, with helping to popularize the whole idea of fitness in the early 80s. And it was Jane Fonda who put out these workout videos that got women suddenly into the idea of working out and women sweating. I got news for you, folks. I know this all sounds crazy. If you're of a certain age, you can't understand it. But the whole idea of a woman sweating in public was kind of an odd thing. And not too long ago. So the idea of women working out, of women going to a health club, and that's when the idea of a health club and the look of it and the environment of it changed. They used to be, when guys would go, it was just very basic. It was just this hard, ugly steel equipment, and it was just, you know, in a little side of a room. And, you know, some showers and some, you know, they always had the mirrors there to look to see if you're, you know, getting some definition. But health clubs in the 60s and even in the early to mid 70s were hardly inviting places. They were very drab and they were very just, they were there, they were not social places. They were just there. You went there, you worked out, you sweat, you took a shower and you left. That's what guys do, you know. And it wasn't until Jane Fonda popularized with some video cassettes the whole idea of the Jane Fonda workout, where women started to make fitness a part of their everyday routine. And then from that grew the idea of health clubs that were more inviting for women. And there were just, at first, there were just some women-only ones. And now, of course, but the whole idea of a health club being more inviting with lights. You know, the old health clubs were very kind of dark-looking. And as I said, they weren't very appealing or attractive. There wasn't any color anywhere. There was no, you know, it was just very utility. There's a machine. Go on it and do some reps. So Jane Fonda really did, begin the movement of the fitness craze in this country and in the world, I think, you know, back in the 80s. And now it's turned into what it is today. It's a part of people's lifestyles. But it wasn't a part of people's lifestyles as early as 40-some years ago, certainly 50 years ago. If you worked out, that you meant you were you a musclehead or something, and it was mostly men. But my point is that there was this beginning in the 70s of at least the beginning eating healthier. And so Raisin Bran was one of the first major cereals out there to play into this whole idea of bran and fiber, because most cereals were aimed at kids and were all just packed with sugar, and still are to some extent. I mean, they're trying to lower the sugar, but back in the 60s and 70s, I mean, most of the cereals, it was just what tasted good. And what tastes good to a kid is sugar, right? And they're running around for 25 hours. And, you may have heard the old marketing strategy, and I think it still applies today. If you go into a local grocery store and you see where how the cereals are presented and displayed on the shelves, you will notice that the more children-oriented cereals that are more, you know, cartoon character based or more sugar based are at the bottom of the display in your cereal aisle, and the more healthier ones are at eye distance or higher where the adult might be. And the whole idea is that the kids are smaller and shorter, and they will see their favorite cereal, whether it's got favorite cartoon character on it or whatever it is, and they will walk and just grab it and throw it into the cart because it's at their eye level. They don't care about the ones higher or even at the top of the shelf, A, they can't reach them. B, they're not interested in them because they are more healthier. And that's where the adult eye line is and eyesight line is, and that's where the adult can reach up. So psychology at work, folks. If you've never noticed that, if you've never heard about that, next time you go to the grocery store and go into the cereal aisle, take a look to see what's at the bottom, at the very on the bottom closest to the ground. It's always kids-oriented types of cereals. And then as you move up, it's more adult-oriented and health-oriented because that's where the adult's line of sight is. Interesting. So I remember at first, when my dad, he had this heart attack in the mid-70s. And so he certainly had to go on a, get healthier and eat healthier and quit smoking and that whole thing. And so, so one of the first things he brought, Raisin Bran in the house, right? We're going to start to eat healthier here. Well, of course, what was so funny, the reason why initially Raisin Bran was kind of popular, yes, it had this bran, which was a buzzword at that time for health. There was grape nuts and bran, fiber, as the culture was just beginning to learn about nutrition. Our culture was never nutritionally based at all. And so in the 70s, it really started to get some mainstream hold. And so, of course, the leading cereal makers decided to jump on this, but they couldn't go, completely into the total health mode because they wanted to sell some cereal and they knew what people would like. To just have a bowl of bran, of plain bran, wouldn't taste very good, especially back in those days when people's taste buds still were used to having all this sugar and indulging in things. So the leading brands couldn't just expect that people are going to go from 100% sugar to zero and like it. Those would have died on the vine, right? So what they interestingly did, especially with Raisin Bran, was in these brand cereals. First of all, they put something sweet in the bran, a raisin, right, which is a dried up grape. So they put something sweet to begin with to make the brand more appealing and appetizing. And then to even make it more appetizing, they put sugar on the raisin. Now, raisins already have natural sugar in them, but just to make them a little more tasty, they put sugar on top of the raisin. So it was an interesting kind of sell here, because the idea was this was a healthier cereal, when in reality it really wasn't all that much healthier, because yes, the bran flakes didn't have cereal on them or didn't have sugar on them, but the raisins did. So you were still getting a good amount of sugar because they were still worried about taste. So it was kind of this bait and switch here until finally people caught on when they were looking at the, at the ingredients and going, wait a minute, this isn't all that much lower in calories or lower in other nutritional things. It says bran on it. That seems to communicate something healthy, and then it came out. Yeah, so if you're eating Raisin Bran, that's great. But, and I don't know if they've taken some of the sugar off of them or not. And now there are much more healthier, natural cereals. But initially, when Raisin Bran came out, it was kind of a bait and switch in that it was trying to be a healthier breakfast cereal, but it still had a good amount of sugar in it because we love sugar. Well, as I said, as a kid, and I'm sure it even goes on today, I don't know. I don't have children, so I don't know what kind of cereal kids are eating. But I'm sure that most of those good old standbys are still out there, and I'm sure kids are eating them. Parents might be a little, watching a little more as to if they do bring those kind of, you know, sugar-packed cereals in. Maybe they don't buy them every week kind of thing. I don't know. But all I know is when I was growing up, as a little kid, I mean, they were really selling the cereals to little kids with and actually making a point of saying how it had sugar on it. You know, they were trying to hide that fact. Sugar Frosted Flakes. Hey, gang. Because, you know, the original Corn Flakes were kind of blah, and people would put sugar on them to make them a little more appetizing. And then somebody wisely came up with the idea, well, why don't we put the sugar on for the people? And here came Corn Flakes, became Sugar Frosted Flakes, and Tony the Tiger, and they were great. And I'm so when I saw something about the brand or something, I don't know if somebody made a comment on TV or there was a commercial, but we started talking about cereals, and so then I just started to mention some of the cereals that I remember as being a kid and talk about how your taste buds change and how what you consider appetizing or not change. Now, when I was a kid, I loved Frosted Flakes. I mean, it was my go-to cereal. I ate Frosted Flakes, and not even just for breakfast. I mean, I ate Frosted Flakes for a snack. I mean, I just love Frosted Flakes. I had a Tony the Tiger plastic bowl. It was orange with the, with the tiger stripes on it. Somehow I remember I must have put it on the, it was just plastic bowl. I must have, unfortunately, put it on the stove, not knowing, one day, and a little part of the bottom melted. And it melted with a little bump. So from that moment on, my Tony the Tiger bowl was kind of deformed, and it had this big, on the bottom, wherever I laid it down, on some hot surface, it began to melt. Then I must have, my mom or I or my dad, somebody saw it and grabbed it off and stopped it before it completely melted. So the sides of the bowl were still good. So I could still use it as my bowl because I loved my Tony the Tiger bowl. But it was kind of deformed. In the bottom, there was this big bump where the heat rose from the bottom and started to melt it. So it was an odd thing to eat in. But I didn't care. Because once I filled it up with cereal and milk, it looked as good as new. I didn't see the bottom anymore. And I had my Tony the Tiger spoon. A metal spoon, which I still have today on display in my kitchen. My official Tony the Tiger spoon. My mom kept it. As I've said many times, oh, my mom was a pack rat, but she did save some cool things of my childhood. And she must have realized that how much I loved this Tony. You know, this is a part of my childhood. I remembered it. I never told her to keep it, but she knew. She had to have known, because why would you keep this Tony the Tiger spoon after all these years? But I still have it. And when I look at that in my kitchen, I'm still brought back to my youth of eating Frosted Flakes. So I loved Frosted Flakes. But as we said, you get it to an age, then you get a little older, you know, you sort of outgrow those kiddie cereals. I remember about 15 years ago, it had to have been, you know, I hadn't had Frosted Flakes now, you know, in 20 years or 15 years, right? Just, you know, started to eat more granola kind of things and, you know, or didn't even really eat cereal anymore, right? So one day we're walking through the aisle, and I said, you know, I haven't had Frosted Flakes in like 15 or 20 years. And it was such a major part of my childhood. And I love these Frosted Flakes just as a nostalgic kind of thing. I'm going to buy a bag. I bought a small box. And then buy the big jumbo box. I'm going to just buy a small box of Frosted Flakes. There's Tony the Tiger looking at me from that box just as he had been, you know, 20 years before. Big smile. You know that big Tony the Tiger smile? There was something about that smile that I loved about Tony. And, you know, his great. And so I'm like, I'm buying some Frosted Flakes. Couldn't even wait. Came home from the grocery store. I'm having some Frosted Flakes. Didn't have my deformed bowl anymore, unfortunately. My half melted bowl. And at that time, I don't think I even knew where my spoon was. But I still had my Frosted Flakes. Now, I don't know about you, but I think there are two schools of cereal eating. There are the soggy and the crispy. I am a soggy. I love a nice, soggy, limp flake. I love when my cereal gets really soggy really quick in the milk. Now, some brands brag about how they don't get soggy. Those never get in my house. I like a nice, soggy cereal. I will pour the cereal. I will always, you know, another thing I like to do, this might go back to my little Tony the Tiger day, because I was using this bowl probably much longer than I should have in terms of my age. I would put cereal in the bowl, put milk in it, and then crunch the flakes to add a little more cereal. That's how much I love Frosted Flakes. But then I would wait for the one thing about Frosted Flakes, the great thing, not only are they great tasting, but they are great at getting soggy fast. So I would pour the milk in my Frosted Flakes, crunch them up, and let them sit. I would go out. I would leave the room. I've got my flakes have to get soggy. I don't like crunchy Frosted Flakes. So I would go off. You know, I would pour the milk, and I would literally leave. I would walk away from the table for a few minutes for them to get soggy, and then I'd come back, and then they were hopefully at the best kind of soggy, limpy, mushy. Doesn't this sound great? You know, texture, and that was the perfect flake for me. And even today, when I look for a cereal, an adult cereal in quotes, I will let it sit for a while in the milk in the hopes that it will get soggy. And if a certain cereal does not get soggy, it does not come back in the house. I will not like it. One of my favorite, I don't eat a lot of cereal anymore, but if I do, if I have the feeling, the taste for a cereal, I will get Honey Bunches of Oats. You know that commercial with the woman who works they have an actual factory worker. She's got the hairnet on, and she talks about Honey Bunches of Oats. That's my favorite adult cereal, because Honey Bunches of Oats gets so soggy so fast. It's even better than Frosted Flakes ever was. This cereal gets so soggy so fast. If you like limpy, soggy cereal, let me just say Honey Bunches of Oats. I don't eat it all that much, but whenever I have a hunkering and a hunger for some cereal and I'm in the grocery store, I'll buy a small box of Honey Bunches of Oats. And my gosh, they know exactly who they're aiming it at. They're at the soggy folks. I'm a soggy. Some people are crispy. I'm a soggy. My wife's a crispy. She's like, what are you doing to that cereal? That looks disgusting. I'm like, no way. This is the way I eat my cereal. Now, I should mention, I do like cream of wheat. I like malto meal. And I love oatmeal, especially the steel-cut oatmeal these days. So I guess I'm always a favor of the mushy over the crispy when it comes to cereal. But my gosh. So I would eat Frosted Flakes all the time. So about 20 years or so ago, when I hadn't had it for a while, I buy a box of Frosted Flakes. And I am so looking forward to this first bite of Frosted Flakes because, my gosh, you know, this is nostalgia. I'm going to bring myself back to my youth. I took, you know, and I did the same thing. I crushed them in my bowl. I let them sit. I reverted back to my childhood. I was 8 years old again. And I did all of my little rituals on how to eat my Frosted Flakes. And when I thought that they were just at the right soggy consistency, I took a spoonful and I put it in my mouth and I began to taste it and to chew it. And I'm not joking. I spit it out. Oh my gosh, was it sweet? I mean, talk about your taste buds completely changing. I used to eat that stuff as a little kid, as I said, you know, 5 times a day. And now I couldn't even swallow one spoonful. The sugar was, my head was spinning. It was so sweet. My taste buds must have, you know, changed so much in my adult life that I spit that out. It felt like I was just eating pure sugar. And I didn't even eat the rest of the box. I threw the box. I said, I can't do this. I still love Tony the Tiger. I still love him as a character. I still have great memories of eating Frosted Flakes. So nothing against Frosted Flakes. I just can't eat them anymore. Wow, were those sweet. It was a sugar overload. Whew! So it got me talking about, when we were talking about the Raisin Bran with my wife, I started to say, wow, well, what cereals did you eat? And we started going back and forth about our favorite cereals. And so, and I started to mention some ones, and you know, I remembered, I know I'm such a TV-aholic. I mean, you know, I just grew up with television and I watched it all the time and still do. And I can, you know, still sing so many of the commercials for things. I remember the commercial jingles, you know, like my favorite songs. You know, A is for apple, J is for Jacks, cinnamon, toasty, apple Jacks. 8 great vitamins, that's what it packs. A and J spells apple Jacks, apple Jacks, ooh, apple Jacks, apple Jacks, ooh, apple Jacks. I mean, yeah, that's right off the top of my head, folks. And, you know, so I started we started to go back and forth with my wife as to what, you know, cereals she ate as a kid and what cereals I did. And being in the same age, we, you know, we had many of the same ones, but then we had many different ones. I'm always drawn, as I said, having grown up with television, I was always drawn to, you know, the cereals that had, you know, the coolest characters. And in the 70s, I don't know how it is now, because I'm not even really paying attention to the cereal commercials like I did, because I don't really eat them anymore. But when I was a little kid, they were certainly marketing to me. And they knew that the best way to get to a kid was through cool characters, cartoon characters. And so I sat down and I started making a list here of my favorite cereals. And as I look at the list, they all had cool characters. And they're still very close to my heart in terms of the memories. But then I started to get a little specific about each cereal. So like I said, I love Frosted Flakes. Always would be number one. In the mid to late 70s, there were two major similar cereals called Quake and Quisp. I think Quisp may still be around, and there's a reason why. Quake and Quisp were basically the same tasting cereals. The only difference was that Quisp was, you know, supposedly an alien, and you know, he had that little beanie on his head. You can look up Quisp. You can Google Quisp, Q-U-I-S-P, you know, on the internet now. But Quisp and Quake. Quake, I believe, was some kind of an excavator. He was in a cave or something, because he had like a hard hat with a light on it. So I think he worked in a cave. And Quisp was an alien. So the Quake were kind of nugget shaped. Because that was, don't forget, that was a key thing about cereals, especially when I was a kid in the 70s. The shape of the cereal was just as important as the taste. They had to have a cool shape. They had to look cool. Now, you know, Frosted Flake was Frosted Flakes, but many times the actual cereal's shape, Lucky Charms, and things like that were there to also entice you. Not just the box or the character on the box, but the actual shape of the cereal itself enticed you, especially on the commercial. Quisp and Quake were basically the same taste, but Quisp was like a little looked like a little flying saucer because he was an alien, and Quake was, as I said, some kind of a cave excavator or something because he had a hard head. I remember that. And so I guess the manufacturer at one point was like, well, you know, we're going to get rid of one or the other here because they're kind of the same anyway. So they wisely created a contest that kids voted for. Now, this is pre-internet, right? I think you voted by, you know, cutting in the box top and sending it in with your vote or somehow. I don't know how they did it back then. But I remember having a Quake hard hat. I mean, I sent in for this. It had a light on it. And they also had the Quisp little beanie. There was a beanie that they sold that had a little propeller on it. I told you I was into this stuff, folks. But they had a contest, and whoever would win, it was, what's your favorite, Quake or Quisp? And then the winner, you know, the loser would be gone forever. And Quisp won. And Quake went away. And the funny thing is that when I talk about this to people my age, many of them remember Quisp and they forgot about Quake. Now, I think Quake came from earthquake, you know, like I said before, caves and rocks and stuff. But poor Quake. I used to like Quake. I liked him better than Quisp initially. Quisp was cool looking, you know, kind of a kooky little alien. But for some reason, I was drawn to Quake and then he went away. And sadly, it sounds as if Quake has left the entire pop culture world. There's those of us who remember Quake. If you're a Quake fan, I'm with you, gang. But there was Quisp and Quake. Now, of course, everybody loved Rice Krispies. Now, the thing about Rice Krispies, you know, Snap, Crackle, and Pop, they did, you know, the whole, they used to sell the idea that they used to actually make that sound when you put the milk on them. They would make the rice sound would go, and they sold that. They said, listen, it's the cereal that talks. And I remember pouring the cereal in my Rice Krispies and listening to the bowl. That's how influenced I was by these commercials. You cannot underestimate the power of advertising, especially on a kid. I remember listening to my Rice Krispies to see if they really did snap, crackle, and pop, and they sort of did. They sort of did. But if you remember when you ate corn or Rice Krispies as a kid, they did not have sugar on them, which you would think would be a mortal sin. Yet, Snap, Crackle, and Pop were so cool, they were able to overcome that. But what you did as a kid, especially, I don't know if adults did at the time, I don't know if the adults ate Rice Krispies, but if you were a kid in the 70s and you ate Rice Krispies, you put the Rice Krispies in the bowl, and then you had the sugar bowl right next to you, and you put, you know, several spoonfuls of sugar on the Rice Krispies. And the thing about that was that the sugar was heavy. It didn't, if you remember this, it didn't stay on the Rice Krispies. It went to the bottom of the bowl. It kind of sweetened the milk. But you had to keep stirring the bowl because the sugar went right to the bottom. And there'd be this lump of sugar on the bottom of your bowl many times. So it sweetened the milk. It didn't really sweeten the frost, the Rice Krispies, because it fell right off the rice. The Rice Krispies were so thin that even the sugar couldn't stand them. So it went right to the bottom. And then the makers of Rice Krispies got smart and said, well, why don't we just sugar them for the people and take out that extra step? So, of course, I bought those right away. But those were so, even as a little kid, I remember, those were so sweet. Oh, my gosh. Woo! So I went right back to the original with the blue box. The new box, I think, and this is my memory again, is the new box with the sugar on the Rice Krispies was yellow. I remember that. So that was always the thing about Rice Krispies, was that you had to put sugar on them, but the sugar always went to the bottom of the bowl. But it was still, it was a perennial. It's still around, of course. I liked Apple Jacks. I'm a big Flintstones fan. I loved Cocoa and Fruity Pebbles. Those, oh, The Cocoa and the Fruity Pebbles, those got so soggy so fast. Another great one, another great soggy cereal, is Fruity or Cocoa Pebbles. And the advantage of the Cocoa Pebbles was that the Cocoa Pebbles flavoring, and you already know it if you're a fan of Cocoa Pebbles, you know what I'm going to say, it made the milk chocolate. The Cocoa Pebbles blended into the milk and made the milk chocolate. So not only were you eating the chocolate pebbles, which were very light and flaky and got soggy very fast, but then the milk turned chocolate. A double whammy. How do you go wrong with that? Yabba dabba doo is what I had to say to that. I loved the monster cereals, Frankenberry, Chocula, Count Chocula, Boo Berry. But I was always partial to blueberry. I love blueberry even today. So I liked blueberry. I'm not a big fan of strawberry, so I was never a big fan of Frankenberry. Count Chocula I liked, but blueberry was my favorite. And I liked blueberry the character, because he sort of talked like Peter Lorre. And he wore a nice little cool straw hat. So I liked blueberry. Now, of course, Captain Crunch, a perennial. And there are many offshoots of Captain Crunch, too. A couple I liked, a couple I didn't like. The original Captain Crunch, now you had to really, I don't care who you were, you had to really wait for that cereal to get soggy. Because if you ate Captain Crunch, and I know the word is in the title, Crunch, but if you ate Captain Crunch too soon, it would tear the roof of your mouth. It would literally scrape the roof of your mouth, and it would hurt. You had to let Captain Crunch get soggy. You had to. Now, I liked Cinnamon Crunch, which was a Captain Crunch offshoot, which featured the pirate character from the Captain Crunch commercials. I did not like Crunch Berries. If you remember the Captain Crunch Berries, there was some goofy character they had, was a Crunch Berry beast. And they put like some kind of fruity strawberry crunch ball within the Captain Crunch cereal, call them Crunch Berries. I didn't like the Crunch Berry one. I didn't like the character, A, of the Crunch Berry beast, and I didn't like the Crunch Berries. But I liked the Cinnamon Crunch, which was basically Captain Crunch with cinnamon, because I love cinnamon now. And that featured the pirate. So you can go back on, and once again, go online and you'll see all these boxes and you'll see all these names. So I'm not making these up. What else? King Vitamin. It was actually called King Vitaman, but the word vitamin was there. But King Vitamin. King Vitaman. I loved King Vitaman. I liked, once again, the character. I liked his crown and stuff. So I used to eat King Vitaman. Kaboom! Was another one. Now, Kaboom wasn't a great cereal, but what was great about Kaboom, there was a cool clown on the cover of the box, and the actual cereal itself were all little multicolored clown faces. How cool is that? So you poured the cereal, and when it floated, the white filled in the spaces, and there was a bunch of clown faces looking at you. Yeah, you couldn't beat that. Kaboom. A lot of people don't remember Kaboom. But I loved Kaboom. I remember Cookie Crisp. These were like little mini chocolate chip cookies. How could you go wrong with that? A cereal that's basically little mini chocolate chips in milk. As I got older, I liked Golden Grahams. Remember Golden Grahams? They were like graham crackers, mini graham crackers in cereal. Those were good. I used to like Golden Grahams. I wasn't a big Lucky Charms guy. I wasn't a big Kix. And one that I remember loving was a brand. It only lasted a few years in the 70s. It was called Freakies. And there were these weird, freaky characters that lived in a tree. But once again, my mom saved so much of stuff myself. I'm going through stuff I used to draw a lot when I was a kid. And I drew all the different characters of the Freakies. There was Boss Moss and Goody Goody. And I drew, and I still have my Boss Moss drawing that I drew of the Freakies. I don't really remember what Freakies tasted like. I knew I liked it, but I once again was just enamored by the characters. If there was a cool cartoon character on the box of cereal, I went for it. And so I don't know. You might be fun for you to think back of some of the cereals that you ate. But now you go online and you just hit like cereals of the 70s, cereals of the 80s, cereals of the 60s. And all the boxes will come up. It'll jog your memory. I was a major cereal fan. And I don't know, as I said, I have not had any Boo Berry. I know they still make Boo Berry and those things. I don't really buy cereal anymore. After my Frosted Flakes encounter, I have to think they are so full of sugar that I couldn't even eat them again. But my gosh, I remember eating those cereals, loving those cereals, and being so attracted to, as I said, all those characters, whether it was Captain Crunch or Tony the Tiger or Quake or Quisp or the Apple Jacks or, you know, Fred Flintstone on the cover of the Cocoa Puffs and the Fruity, or the Cocoa Pebbles and the Fruity Pebbles, or the Freakies with Boss Moss and the Count Chocula and the Frankenberry and the Boo Berry and the Captain Crunch and the Crunchberry Beast and the Pirate and King Vitamin and Kaboom and all these other cereals that really, I'm sure that I ate those up and through until I was at least 11 or 12. And then I just think I started to get more active and more athletic and wasn't eating, you know, kid cereals anymore. And it started, and just my taste buds changed, but my memories did not. And so let me just leave you with this. If you're going to try, go. The next time you go to the store, remember your favorite cereal. If they still make it, do yourself a favor. It'll be fun. Grab a box of a couple, maybe even a couple of your box of your favorite cereals when you were a kid, and give them one more chance and see if you still like them or you did like I did and you couldn't even eat them. They were so full of sugar. The taste may change, but the memories, oh, the memories still are great. And so, ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com or is available at any spot, any platform where you download your favorite podcast. Don't forget to rate this podcast and to tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. If you are a regular listener, I certainly appreciate your loyalty and devotion. It is what keeps me doing this every week. And we'll be back again next week. Hope you enjoyed episode number 198. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. It's great!